I begin with a reading on freedom. These words come from a famous essay in defense of freedom of speech by the blind poet John Milton. They apply with equal force to freedom of religion. For that reason, they are included as reading number 671 in our UU hymnal. I have taken the liberty, which is another word for freedom, to modernize the language just a little bit, but I hope I haven't changed the meaning. Our faith and knowledge thrive by exercise, just like our limbs and our complexion. If the waters of truth do not flow freely, they sicken into a muddy pool of conformity and tradition. The gift of sight was bestowed upon us, not so we would forever stare straight ahead, but so that we could discover new things beyond what we already know. Where there is great desire to learn, there will necessarily be much arguing, much writing, many opinions. Above all freedoms, give me liberty to know, to speak, and to argue freely according to conscience. If all the teaching of the ages were let loose to blow over the earth, if the truth were among them, we should not underestimate her strength. For everyone knows that the truth is strong, nearly almighty. She needs no directives, no tricks to make her victorious. Let truth and falsehood wrestle. Has anyone ever witnessed truth to lose in a free and open contest? Like a timid candidate for public office, I can't begin without an opinion poll. Imagine that you are telling someone, a stranger or an acquaintance, that you are a UU. And then that person says, sure, I've heard of Unitarians, but I don't really know what they do or what they believe. Raise your hand high if you have ever encountered that sort of remark. We get that all the time, don't we? Sometimes the comment is friendly. Other times, a bit hostile. Often it is apologetic, because an educated person really should know who we are. Sometimes there is a hint of unease, as though the speaker were a little bit afraid of the answer. But mostly we get the impression that our congregation is perceived as some kind of mildly weird cult or sect, and that the safest strategy is to ignore us. My purpose today is not to explain what the UUs believe or what we do. Instead, I'm going to turn the tables around and try to put myself into the other person's shoes. I'm thinking of a situation in which I find myself saying to someone, oh, sure, I've heard of you folks, but I don't really know what you believe in or what you do. The people I have in mind are the Freemasons, also known as Masons for short. Like most of you, I've heard of them all my life, and my reaction to them has all the hallmarks I listed before. I don't know anything about them. I'm a little bit ashamed of my ignorance, and I feel faintly uneasy about the subject, because some of what I've heard is kind of weird. On the whole, I'd rather avoid the issue altogether. But not today. This morning, I'd like to take you by the hand so together we can lift a corner of the veil that shrouds the Masons in mystery. In the process, we'll make a surprising discovery, namely that we UUs actually have much in common with the Masons. We are not merely fellow outsiders. It turns out that we share a lot of history and many core beliefs. And that discovery, of course, is very rewarding. It's always gratifying to find kindred spirits in unexpected places. It liberates. It liberates us and expands our horizons. It is a prelude to connection. So who are these Masons? They're all around us and probably even among us. After all, they outnumber us by 4 to 1. In the United States alone, there are about 2 million Masons compared to about 500,000 of us. In the rest of the world, the proportion is about the same. We Unitarians smile in amused pride when Garrison Keillor cracks the occasional you-you joke on Prairie Home Companion. But the Masons are much more deeply embedded in our popular culture. For example, in 2009, Dan Brown published a sequel to The Da Vinci Code, which itself rivals Harry Potter in global circulation. Entitled The Lost Symbol, the sequel is all about Masons and Freemasonry. However, I wouldn't recommend it as a textbook on the subject. Dan Brown has perfected the art of sailing perilously close to the border between fact and fabrication. While he rarely crosses that border, he nevertheless manages to leave the reader with a set of fantastical impressions of what Masonry stands for. Brown knows that fantasy sells better than fact. Before I highlight what UUs have in common with Masons, I need to recall some of the charges that are routinely but erroneously leveled against them. The Masons have been so vilified in the past and even persecuted by Hitler, for example, who killed 200,000 of them, that I have to start by debunking the most common misconceptions and myths about them. My principal source is Ian Ellis Jones, an Australian Mason, speaking to the Sydney Unitarian Church in Australia on the subject, The Truth About Freemasonry. That was in 2006. And I might mention that I sent him a copy of my sermon to see whether my facts were correct, and I got an email from him yesterday saying it was fine. The first and most widespread myth about Freemasons is that theirs is a secret society. I used to believe that myself, but was always puzzled when I drove on the Washington Beltway past the imposing George Washington Masonic National Memorial in Alexandria. How secret can they be, I wonder, when they put their name on a colossal edifice like that for everyone to see and admire? Had I actually bothered to visit the Masonic Monument, I would have been surprised to be welcomed inside with open arms. Today, I don't even have to drive up to Alexandria. I can just Google it and take a virtual tour. No, the Masons are not a secret society. The secrets they keep are handshakes and other private signs for recognizing each other, plus certain traditional initiation rites. Those are intended to act as social glue to strengthen the bonds of the group. But college fraternities and sororities do exactly the same thing, and nobody accuses them of being secret societies. As far as keeping secrets is concerned, your average business corporation defends its privacy far more vigorously than a Masonic lodge, to say nothing of the United States government. Nor is Freemasonry a religion or cult. There is no creed, no sacred text, no doctrine, no dogma, no sacrament, no hymnal, no clergy. In fact, at lodge meetings, discussion of religion and politics are expressly forbidden. The concept of God does play a role in the movement, and I'll come back to that. But theirs is a generalized sort of God. In keeping with the origins of the society in medieval stonemasons' guilds, God is often referred to as the great architect of the universe or the grand geometrician of the universe. Love that word, grand geometrician of the universe. The letter G in the Universal Masonic Lodge, which is shown on your order of service, stands for God. It also stands for geometry, for the great architect, and the grand geometrician. Masonic symbols often have multiple and complex meanings. One symbol employed by the Masons is the all-seeing eye of God, also known as the eye of providence. We all carry it around in our purses and wallets, engraved on the dollar bill, hovering over an unfinished pyramid. According to urban legend, this reflects the powerful and sinister influence of Freemasons on our nation. But the facts speak against that claim. The origin of the image goes back as far as the ancient Egyptians and was a common Christian symbol in medieval and Renaissance times. Centuries before the foundation of the first Masonic Lodge in the year 1717. Furthermore, the Great Seal of the United States was, as one might imagine, designed in 6 years of contentious committee meetings by men of whom only one, Ben Franklin, was definitely a Mason. Most telling is the fact that the American Masons adopted the Eye of Providence for regular use fully 15 years after the Great Seal was designed. So there's no basis for those conspiracy theories, which unfortunately doesn't prevent them from continuing to proliferate like weeds in the fertile soil of the World Wide Web. Just try it. For us, it is important to mention another set of charges that has contributed with particular force to the persecution of Masons. It is the allegation that Freemasonry is anti-religion, more specifically anti-Christian, and particularly anti-Catholic. All three claims are false. The first one contradicts the accusation that Masonry is itself a religion. I find it absurd to condemn Freemasons as believers and as heathens at the same time. The more specific claim of being anti-Christian sounds familiar to us UUs and reflects the fact that the person of Jesus plays no special role in Masonic rituals. Historically, the fiercest opposition to Freemasonry by established religion has come from the Catholic Church. While excommunication is no longer the official punishment for a Mason, joining the Masons is still expressly forbidden to a Catholic. Conversely, the Masons accept members of all religions without prejudice. I think that the Catholic injunction against Masonry, as well as Hitler's fury toward them, was born of the fear of the light of truth, of the very freedom of thought and speech that Milton glorified, and that the Freemasons embody. Parenthetically, I should add that while Masons are primarily male, some Masonic lodges admit women. Furthermore, throughout the world, there are sister organizations, such as the Order of the Eastern Star, which is a sorority in parallel with the Masonic fraternity. So in reality, the Freemasons, far from practicing forbidden occult rites and plotting to take over the world, really form what is called a non-sectarian fraternity of men of all different religions. It is an ethical society that upholds a peculiar system of morality veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols. But what do we have in common with them? The answer that in many points our histories and our beliefs overlap. That answer was laid out in a recent essay by the Connecticut UU minister and Mason, Ronald Sala. Did you get that? UU minister and Mason. That dual affiliation, UU and Freemason, was not uncommon back in colonial America. I'll only mention two famous examples. Paul Revere was a Masonic Grandmaster and a Unitarian. Among the Universalists, Hosea Ballou, who has been called the most important leader in the history of Universalism, was also a Freemason. In addition to these, countless other free-thinking Americans found spiritual and intellectual companionship in the two associations. Both provide an escape from oppression by the officially established religions of the time. Is it any surprise then to learn that 100 years after the American Revolution, the Freemasons were instrumental in creating the world's greatest monument to freedom, the Statue of Liberty? Both its sculptor and its architect were Masons. Freemasons on both sides of the Atlantic took pride in their contributions, artistic, political, and financial, to this symbol of universal enlightenment. The affinity of the UUs and the Masons is based on a common set of basic principles. What did they believe in, these lovers of liberty? Three words may serve to summarize our common fundamental principles: freedom, reason, and tolerance. The word freedom resonates with the very name of the Freemasons, masters of their own fate. We UUs use the word freedom in its Latinized form of liberty when we describe ourselves as a liberal religion. When a Mason is initiated into the fraternity, he is charged with belief in a supreme being. However, and this is the point that came as the greatest surprise to me when I started, somewhat late in life admittedly, to throw some light on this strange group of people that had always intrigued me. According to Ellis Jones, each Freemason believes in a God of his own understanding, and Freemasonry does not ask a candidate to define his concept of God when seeking admission to the fraternity. Nor does Freemasonry itself make any demands as to how a member thinks of the great architect of the universe, nor on why or how its members choose to exercise their religion. Doesn't that sound like the UU encouragement to build your own theology? Isn't that a very fundamental tenet of our denomination? Isn't that deep down one of the principal reasons for which many of us became UUs? How do we say it in the opening of our service? You are welcome here, whatever your concept of the holy. The second principle that connects UUs with Masons is the respect for reason. That's not surprising. Remember that Freemasonry originated during the Enlightenment of the 18th century, the Age of Reason. Unitarian minister and Mason Thaddeus Mason wrote at the time, "Masonry's laws are reason and equity, its principles benevolence and love, its religion, purity and love. Its intention is peace on earth, and its disposition, goodwill toward men." In the 18th century, Masonry and UUism were both based on deism, the belief that reason and observation of the natural world are sufficient to determine the existence of God, without divine revelation or clerical authority. Recent historical research has tried to establish the fact that, contrary to popular belief, most of our founding fathers were closer to deism than to Orthodox Christianity. In this, they were the intellectual cousins of both the Masons and the UUs. Freedom, reason, and tolerance. Freemasonry acknowledges the validity of every creed, considering none of them to be superior. This attitude of tolerance is at the root of the extraordinary hatred by some sectarians. They are offended when it turns out that their most cherished beliefs are not shared by the whole world. For us UUs, tolerance is equally ingrained. Witness our efforts to support minorities of every stripe. To misquote Groucho Marx, the only church I could join is one that tolerates an old renegade like me. So through history and through shared principles, we are linked with the Masons. We are kindred spirits. We are soulmates in free thinking. With this new understanding of the truth about Masons, we are moved to ask, what can we learn from them? What helps us to connect with them? There's one aspect of Masonry that I have not mentioned yet, and that does not pertain to history or philosophy. Rather than with theory, it has to do with action. Ask not what they believe, but what they do. By far, the most publicly visible activity of the Masons is charity, and they are very good at it. So if we're ever moved to get better acquainted with our newfound spiritual brothers, we might consider a joint charitable project. Then perhaps we would find ourselves standing side by side with them, patiently placing brick upon metaphorical brick under the watchful eye of the supreme architect of the universe. We would become fellow Masons, builders of a better world. So may it be. Amen.